You know, we hear so much about the billions, even trillions, spent trying to tackle global poverty. So many initiatives, so much effort.
Yeah, and yet sometimes it feels like we're just spinning our wheels, doesn't it? The needle barely seems to shift sometimes.
Exactly. It really does make you pause and ask, hang on, have we maybe been looking at this whole thing the wrong way?
Well, that's pretty much the central question behind the book, The Prosperity Paradox: How Innovation Can Lift Nations Out of Poverty. The authors, Christensen, Ojomo, and Dillon, they're suggesting something, well, quite different.
Different how?
Instead of just focusing on alleviating poverty, which is crucial, of course, they argue we need to shift our focus towards actively creating prosperity, building new value.
Okay, creating prosperity. I like the sound of that. And for this deep dive, we're drawing on some really interesting points from an interview Paul L. Wilson did with Karen Dillon, one of the authors.
Yeah, it gets right to the heart of their core idea, this concept they call market-creating innovation.
Right. So the goal here for you listening in is to really get a handle on what that means. We want to unpack this idea of focusing on, what did they call it? Non-consumption.
That's it, non-consumption. Basically, looking at situations where people aren't buying something, not because they don't want or need it.
But because the existing options are just totally out of reach, unavailable, too expensive, whatever it might be.
Precisely. And the argument is that targeting that non-consumption can actually be a much more powerful way to drive real, lasting progress.
Okay, let's dive into that then. So, what is this market creating innovation? How is it fundamentally different from, say, just making a slightly better smartphone or adding a new feature?
It's a great question. Market creating innovation isn't about those incremental improvements. It's really about bringing a product or service to people who literally had no access before.
Ah, okay. So people who are completely excluded from that market.
Exactly. People who couldn't afford anything on offer, or maybe no solution even existed for their specific problem. Think less about a new color for a car.
And more about like bringing affordable lighting to a village that only had kerosene lamps.
Perfect example. It's a fundamental shift, creating access where there was none. It's not just improving, it's originating.
The article we looked at had this great analogy. It described it like a traveler in a really dense forest. Everyone else says there's no path here.
Right. But the market-creating innovator is the one who says, okay, let's make a path, and just starts hacking away, imagining something that isn't there yet.
That really captures the vision and the persistence it must take.
Absolutely. It takes imagination, sure, but also a huge amount of grit, because you're often going where the challenges look biggest. The authors stress that these innovators, they look for where the pain points are really sharp.
Where there are no easy answers.
None at all. They specifically look for the people being left out and ask, you know, what could actually help here? Not just what can we sell more of?
And that really sets the stage for one of the main examples they discuss, Mo Ibrahim and Celtel in Africa.
Oh yeah, that's a classic case study. It's kind of hard to believe now, but back in the 90s, the overwhelming view was that, well, a mobile phone market in Africa just wasn't viable.
Why not? What were the big hurdles people saw?
Well, you had widespread poverty, obviously. Then there was political instability in many places, and crucially, the basic infrastructure, like reliable electricity or communication networks, was often weak or non-existent.
So the deck seemed completely stacked against it.
Totally. But Ibrahim, he saw something different. He looked past those surface problems and recognized this really deep, fundamental human need.
The need to connect.
Exactly. The desire to connect with family, with business contacts.
Yeah.
And the existing ways to do that were just incredibly difficult. We're talking hours, maybe days of travel, huge expense, unreliable landlines.
Wow, just making a simple phone call could be a major undertaking.
A massive hassle. But Ibrahim saw that frustration not as a dead end, but as, well, latent demand, an opportunity.
So he thought, if I can solve this frustration, there's a huge market waiting.
That was the insight. So in 1998, against a lot of skepticism, he launched Celtel. The goal was bold: affordable mobile phones for millions who'd never had them.
And it wasn't easy, I assume.
Oh, far from it. Imagine trying to negotiate licenses across like 14 different countries with different regulations, trying to raise huge amounts of capital when investors are saying, Africa, mobile phones, are you serious?
And building the actual towers and infrastructure, too.
Building it all, pretty much from the ground up. But they innovated. They did things like introduce prepaid cards.
Ah, pay as you go. That
Yeah.
makes sense. People could manage their costs even on low incomes.
Precisely. It made it accessible. They also worked on getting cheaper handsets into people's hands and really invested in training local teams to build and maintain the networks.
Then the impact.
Transformative. Mm-hmm. Within just a few years, Celtel was operating across numerous African countries, connecting millions. Families could stay in touch, small businesses could operate more efficiently, new jobs were created.
And eventually, the company sold for a huge amount, right?
Billions, yes. But it was more than just the money. It showed how tapping into that unmet need, that deep frustration, could unlock incredible value and, well, widespread prosperity. It fundamentally changed things.
That's such a powerful story. It wasn't improving something existing. It was creating something entirely new based on a fundamental need. Okay, so that example highlights finding the unmet need. But the article also really stresses something else, the importance of local context.
Oh, absolutely critical.
It says copy and paste solutions often fail. Why is that so important?
Well, because what works in, say, downtown Chicago isn't automatically going to work in rural Nigeria, yeah. Right? Market-creating innovations, maybe more than any other kind, have to be deeply, deeply embedded in the local reality.
The culture, the logistics, the economy, all of it.
All of it. You can't just take a successful Western business model and plunk it down somewhere else expecting the same results. You miss all the crucial nuances.
And the story they use to illustrate this is Nollywood, the Nigerian film industry, which started in a really unexpected way, didn't it?
Yeah, it's fascinating. Kenneth Nabu, he was an electronics trader. Huh. And he ended up stuck with a huge shipment of blank VHS tapes he couldn't sell.
Right, a failed import deal. Most people would just cut their losses.
But he had this idea. Instead of just selling blank tapes, what if he used them to record something? He decided to make a low-budget movie.
Using local talent.
Exactly. Local actors, local stories, filmed right there in Nigeria. And he made this film, Living in Bondage, crucially, in the Igbo language.
Not English.
No, Igbo. And it just exploded. Because it told stories that resonated with ordinary Nigerians. It showed familiar places, dealt with relevant cultural themes, spoke their language.
So it wasn't trying to be Hollywood. It was authentically Nigerian.
That's the key. It succeeded precisely because it wasn't trying to copy something else. It was built from the ground up for its specific audience, using local resources and reflecting local culture.
And it became this massive industry.
Huge. Nollywood is now one of the largest film industries in the world, employing tons of people. All because Nabu didn't just try to import a solution. He created one rooted in the local context. It shows that authenticity really matters.
It's a great lesson. You have to build for the market, not just in the market. Okay, mm-hmm. So we've got find the unmet need, understand the local context. What else? The article also brought up how development efforts sometimes go wrong.
Yeah, this is a really sensitive but important point. It talks about the tendency for well-meaning outsiders, aid organizations, governments, NGOs, to focus on what they think a community needs.
Yeah, rather than asking the community what their priorities are.
Exactly. There's this risk of imposing solutions based on external assumptions. And the article uses the example of water wells in rural Africa.
Okay, clean water sounds like a pretty universal need. What's the issue there?
The intention is obviously fantastic. Organizations would come in, drill wells, install pumps. Great. People get clean water.
So far, so good.
But then, inevitably, a pump breaks down. And often, there was no plan B. No local expertise trained to fix it, no supply chain for spare parts, no sense of community ownership.
Ah. So the well just stops working, and the community is back where they started, maybe feeling even more let down.
That's the danger. It could be unsustainable. And the article contrasts this with an organization called Water First International.
What do they do differently?
Their whole model is built on partnership. Right from the very beginning, they work with local leaders and the community.
How so?
They involve them in deciding where the water system should go, how it should be designed, who will manage it. They invest heavily in training local people to build and, crucially, maintain the systems long term.
So it's co-created, not just delivered.
Exactly. It's slower, it takes more upfront effort in building relationships and trust. But the results.
The article said 100% of their projects remain operational. That's remarkable.
It really is.
Mm.
And the benefits ripple outwards. Better health, obviously. But also, kids, especially girls, have more time for school because they aren't spending hours hauling water.
And women gain time for other economic activities or community involvement.
Right. It's about enabling sustainable prosperity and, just as importantly, dignity. It comes back to listening first, understanding the real problems people face, and empowering them to be part of the solution.
That makes so much sense. It's not just about the what, it's about the how. Now, all these examples, Celtel, Nollywood, Water First, they're often from developing nations. But the article makes a point of saying this isn't just about poverty in far-off places, right?
Absolutely not. That's a really crucial takeaway for you listening. These opportunities for market-creating innovation, these areas of non-consumption, they exist everywhere, even in wealthy countries.
You mean like right here in our own communities?
Definitely. Think about underserved neighborhoods, populations facing specific barriers, groups who are currently excluded from certain services or products because of cost or accessibility. There's potential there.
So we don't necessarily need to look overseas to find these opportunities.
Not at all. The article encourages us to look around with, quote, willing eyes. What needs aren't being met right here? What frustrations could be solved? What can we build in our own context?
It sort of shifts the mindset, doesn't it? From just thinking about fixing existing problems to actively looking for chances to create something entirely new, something valuable, where maybe nothing much exists right now.
That's the essence of it. That's the core message of the prosperity paradox idea. The real power, the quiet opportunity to make a significant difference, often lies in spotting that non-consumption, that unmet need, and building a new market around it.
Rather than just competing harder in the markets we already have.
Exactly. So the key principles we've talked about, focusing on those excluded, really digging into the local context, empowering people, these aren't just development strategies, they're powerful innovation principles.
It leads perfectly into that final thought from the article, which really stuck with me. It asks,
somewhere today, a need goes unmet. Somewhere today, an idea sits unopened.
Somewhere today, the first step toward a new future waits for someone to take it. And the real question is, will it be you?
It's quite the challenge, isn't it? An invitation, maybe.
It really is an invitation to maybe look at our own world, our work, our communities just a little bit differently, to keep an eye out for those quiet opportunities waiting for someone to step up and start building.
Yeah. And maybe that shift in perspective, focusing on creating new value rather than just managing deficits, is a more hopeful and ultimately more effective path towards genuine prosperity for everyone.